Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mouth of the Time podcast. I'm Jordan Cronin. As ever, I'm joined by Miles Stauffer. We've also got our colleague Joe Buck making a return today. Gents, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I should point out the story of my last week is getting a COVID infection. And typically it kind of came on, the symptoms really came on the day Steve Bruce was sacked. So last week was a bit of a struggle at times, but got through it. And Joe, as we'll be discussing later in the pod, was down at Selhurst Park as a result. But I'm much better now and looking forward to the week ahead.
Yeah, good to hear, Joe. See, you were at Selhurst Park on Saturday. I think your first sort of big away trip with the company. How was it for you?
Yeah, it was good. It was my first visit to Selhurst Park in general, actually. I'd never been as a fan, but it's a nice little ground, and the atmosphere there, you know, everyone talks about Selhurst Park atmosphere, but it was loud from the home fans. It was definitely the loudest home fans that I've heard this season.
Yeah, it is. It's a nice sort of old traditional ground, isn't it? I know they've got the corner behind the goal where the fans gather. But no, glad you enjoyed the trip, and we'll come on to that. But before that, there's lots to get through, especially given the last time we found time to record this podcast was a few days before the Tito I went through. So we do apologise for our absence. I know it's been a busy few weeks for us three on this call, yeah. But Miles, in terms of being a manic couple of weeks, I suppose I wouldn't have it any other way, because ultimately this takeover is a game changer. Well, hopefully a game changer for the football club moving forward.
Well, it seems a lifetime ago that there was that game at Watford, the Bruce out chance, more Bruce out chance, and the club obviously still under Mike Ashe's ownership at that point. The future, at least the short term future, looked pretty bleak for the club. But obviously we know now things were starting to move around that time. And then of course the Wolves game as well. And then we had the takeover. The things moved extraordinarily quickly in the end, within a matter of days. And the first inkling that we really got that things were moving, of course, was the In Sports decision in terms of allowing that to be broadcast in Saudi Arabia, which was an issue. Of course, the main issue was the separation, but it was kind of bound up in that, really, the separation between the Saudi state and the public investments fund, PIF. It was an extraordinary few days thinking back, and so much has happened since then, really. It's been an extraordinary month, but you wouldn't have it any other way, really, because for once there's, you know, you can see a brighter future for this club.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, we first set up this podcast at the beginning of the takeover saga last year when the deal was first agreed. And say we're doing podcasts, expecting to go through the next week, and it obviously fell through in the end. So to be at this point now where we have a takeover, I'll be honest, I never thought it was going to happen. I had lost hope that was going to go through. But them few days when it unfolded and the takeover went from nothing to, you know, being announced in a few days was absolutely extraordinary. Obviously the scenes outside the St James's Park on the night that it got released on the Thursday, got announced on the Thursday night was absolutely extraordinary. And then the Tottenham game as well, which again we'll briefly touch upon in the next couple of minutes, was, you know, an unbelievable scenes. But Joe, I'll come on to you here. And the first question I have for you, really, because the podcast we did a few weeks ago, before the takeover was announced, you said, or you predicted, more brighter times ahead after it was all doom and gloom after the Wolves game. Obviously, that's what's happened. The takeover has gone through. So the first question I've got for you was, are you Mystic Meg?
Yeah, obviously knew it was going to happen. I think the brighter times is purely because 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whenever the Wolves game was, I don't think it could have got any worse. It felt like that was rock bottom, you know, another defeat. Mike Ashley, Steve Bruce. And, you know, I did say I'd come back on after a win. I haven't delivered a win, but, you know, I've delivered a takeover. So I think that's a decent replacement for it. But yeah, it's just to think back when we recorded that, because I think we recorded it a couple of hours after the beIN Sports ban had been lifted, the news that broke, and that was like, oh, you know, this could happen. Then all of a sudden, within pretty much 24 hours, the takeover happened, and it feels like a world away, completely different club now than it was back then, even though the results are the same. But it just, you know, everything's lifted, the mood's much brighter, and yeah, it's just crazy.
Don't forget, for those involved, Staveley and others, this has been more or less a 4-year process for them. And as you know, on the, I think the day it went through, me and some others were invited up to Jasmine Dean House to interview Amanda Staveley. Some of these people have been working on this for years, and she was exhausted and elated, a whole bundle of emotions given what she's personally put into this takeover the years. The plan had been, when once it has been confirmed, was for them to go to the stadium, but they were advised it wasn't safe given the sheer numbers of fans around the ground celebrating. So they stayed at the hotel and did the interviews there, and went to the stadium the next day. But when I sat down with Amanda Staveley, she hadn't actually seen the kind of the photos and the video clips of what was going on outside St James's Park, and I showed her on my phone, and you could see the emotion in her. She got very emotional seeing that reaction to this takeover that they've worked so long for. Obviously the hard work really is now ahead of them, because there's so much to do at this club on and off the pitch, and it's going to be a team effort. It's not just Amanda Staveley, of course. There's PIF, there's Jamie Rubin as well as part of this consortium. Just let's hope they can move this club forward and move it away in the short term, at least from the bottom of the Premier League.
Yeah, it was a very quick turnaround when obviously Staveley came in, because I'm not sure she even expected to go through that quickly. In the first week, I suppose one of the big surprises was that Steve Bruce remained in charge for the Tottenham game. But on the balance of that as well, I thought it was brilliant communication by Staveley and the owners as well to explain on the Friday before Steve Bruce took his press conference for the Tottenham game to why he was still in charge. It was all, but in a sense, it was a strange statement in a way as well, because it almost confirmed that Steve Bruce is effectively an interim charge. That's the way I sort of took from it, the way it was worded. And obviously the opening stage of the Spurs match was the loudest I've heard St James's Park in a long time. Say that the war flags display was absolutely unbelievable. And Callum Wilson scores after 2 minutes. But I suppose once all that sort of dipped, the atmosphere dipped, it became apparent that Steve Bruce was still the head coach, and ultimately the same poor habits emerged. Fans, of course, made the feelings clear towards Steve Bruce. More chants, I think, later on in the game, really the loudest thing St James's Park have chanted against Steve Bruce. I think it came from all corners of the ground. Owners obviously in attendance for the game, and they sort of acted on their wishes, because Steve Bruce was sacked on the Wednesday morning. Just before I come to you, Joe, on Graham Jones and the Crystal Palace game, Miles, can you sort of sum up Steve Bruce's 2 years in charge of Newcastle? Because I think we're all in agreement that it was the right decision to relieve him of his duties. But there seems to be a sort of narrative in the national media and amongst certain Premier League managers as well that he did an absolutely unbelievable job and in the end was probably unlucky to lose it.
Yeah, I've kind of queried this kind of national narrative. There's been people have been quite rightly calling out the abuse that Steve Bruce got online, which I've got no time for the vile abuse of Steve Bruce or any other manager or any person online. But that can't cloud the fact that there was a lot of valid, fair criticism directed at Steve Bruce over those 2 years. Of course, he was brought to the club essentially by Mike Ashley to keep it in the Premier League. He did that for 2 years. So he did what Mike Ashley wanted. They had a cup run or two as well. But it was a largely joyless two years for fans and I'll be honest, for journalists. It wasn't always easy dealing with him. You'll have seen the press conferences over the past few weeks, months and so on. The club didn't progress under his watch. I always think back to the Fulham game, Rafa's last in charge, when they won comfortably at Fulham, the final game of the season. You could see the direction the team was going. Hard to beat, with a threat at the other end of the pitch. And that just slowly unraveled. And for 2 years, Steve Bruce never found a way to play an identity, which is, you know, a criticism that's been levelled at him at his previous clubs. What was the plan? Obviously, when Graham Jones came in, we saw different things that were, you know, tried. Some worked, some didn't. And there was that run towards the back end of last season, which ultimately kept the club in the Premier League. So he kept the club in the Premier League, but in my mind, the club didn't progress under his watch. And you'd felt Rafa had left it in a position where with investment, and Steve Bruce did get investment, it could have progressed under the right management. And that didn't happen. And that's the big criticism of Steve Bruce. And that, putting aside all the questions over his conduct in press conferences and everything else we've had to, you know, over the past few months.
Yeah, I mean, my sort of thoughts on Steve Bruce's time at the club. So again, there was a sort of narrative that he wasn't given the chance when he first arrived. But personally, I feel like he was. Don't get us wrong, he wasn't the fans' number one choice, but they didn't turn on him straight away. He was given time. And it sort of, it was one of them where the performances were poor, and, you know, the tactic seemed to be that Newcastle would get peppered for 90 minutes and then nick it at the end. I think the Chelsea game was a perfect reflection of that. And I think it was one of them where fans, if you're watching your team week on week, you can see what's coming, and fans could see that these performances weren't sustainable. And as we found out, it sort of ticked into the start of the second season when he got off to a good start. And then I think it turned really on the Brentford game in the cup.
And don't forget, I think behind closed doors football didn't help the team, because they needed fans behind them, but it probably helped Steve Bruce, because we didn't have that was a year where we had an 11 game run without a win. There was no dissent from the stands because there was no supporters in the stadiums. So it was the weird kind of, you know, situation where the team obviously needed fans behind them. But for Steve Bruce personally, he was spared the kind of the harshest criticism inside stadiums because of behind closed doors football. And if you remember, you know, the final game of last season, final home game, we got the first taste of that when he joined the players on that lap of appreciation.
Yeah, I think I've seen some comments on social media saying that he's potentially one of Newcastle's luckiest ever managers. And in terms of the way his reign played out, I think it wouldn't be totally wrong to say that, because he didn't face the fans for a full season, and he didn't face the media in a press room. The way the Zoom press conferences work is that you'd put your virtual hand up and you'd get one question. Steve Bruce could give an answer and you couldn't get a follow-up question to that. So in that sense, yeah, I'd say that statement badgered around online isn't far off. But one thing as well with Steve Bruce, in terms of the transfer windows he had at the club, he probably got back with the most amount of money out of any of his predecessors. You know, he brought in the likes of Callum Wilson, Alan Saint-Maximin, you know, Jamal Lewis to some extent in terms of his £50 million price tag. And by the end of it, you know, he leaves the club 19th in the Premier League. And I think really, if he had stayed in charge, the club were only going one way. Now, for me, he inherited a better team than what Rafa Benitez did. I'm not trying to compare Rafa Benitez too much, because I don't think the two should be compared, but you know, he inherited a better team and ultimately took it backwards.
Yeah. What's also important, he inherited a good group of players, a committed group of players. That wasn't the case when Rafa took charge. Things have kind of unraveled behind the scenes, you know, under McLaren, but you know, when Steve Bruce inherited a good group and added to it, so he was really in a position to move the club forward. You that was the hope anyway, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, just lastly on Bruce there as well, but you know, Benitez built a sort of defensive wall, and by the end of it, you know, I think before obviously the game on Saturday, in Newcastle had conceded 18 goals in 9 games, which I mean, that wasn't the side that Rafa Benitez left, certainly in a defensive aspect as well. But moving on to the Palace game, obviously Joe, you covered it for the Gazette there, as I mentioned at the start. Graham Jones, obviously in caretaker charge. Did you sense anything different about Newcastle in the first game since Bruce departed, or was it sort of more of the same?
I think there were definitely seemed to be more organised in defence. There was very much when they were defending, it was very much five defenders, three midfielders in front of them, with Wilson and Saint-Maximin in front, and they didn't attack as much as they did maybe against Spurs or the other games, but that then meant they weren't left exposed at the back. I think Palace were easily the better team. I think they had 75% possession. They dominated the game really through Conor Gallagher in midfield, who is some player, by the way. I don't know if, and I know Newcastle were linked with him beginning the season, but he absolutely ran the show. But yeah, so they defended okay. I think their plan was, I think, just to get the ball out wide and then hope they could defend crosses. That worked most of the time, except Christian Benteke really, I mean, he should have had a hat-trick at least. He potentially could have had five. But other than that, the defence looked solid. Once again, it was a bit lifeless. It was a bit like there didn't seem a plan to attack. And other than one bit of magic from Callum Wilson, that was pretty much all they offered going forward. So they did look more solid, but that was probably, you know, their lack of attacking meant that they did look more solid at the back. And that's just the way it was. But if you said Steve Bruce is managing that game, I don't think I would have been surprised, because they didn't look much different. I thought Graham Jones might try and put his own stamp on it. Maybe, I don't know, I know he likes a split striker formation for the back, something like that, but he went for the 5-3-2 that Bruce has played quite often. So, I mean, it was a little bit different, and I think they probably were more organised, but there wasn't much there that gives me confidence that it's, you know, a recipe for success in the future.
Yeah, just in terms of Graham Jones, a lot made at in the start. Pre-match, you know, his connection to Newcastle spoke brilliantly in his pre-match press conference. It was one of them where when Graham Jones spoke about Newcastle, it sort of felt from the heart, whereas with Steve Bruce, it didn't feel as genuine, which is maybe sort of one of the reasons why he didn't connect with supporters as much. But Graham Jones on the touchline, did he manage to get a look at him, Joe? And what was he sort of style like? Was he cheering on the lads?
I'm being honest, I absolutely didn't. I don't know if the way the press box at Sellers Park is, it's on the
you don't see much there, do you?
No. And, you know, I don't see much. I didn't see much of the pitch, never mind the dugout, so absolutely not. There was a point, though, where you've probably seen a match of the day where the high tackle on Ryan Fraser came, and then there was a bit of argy-bargy. That looked quite good, because you could see Graham Jones was quite passionate there. You know, he sort of stood his ground, but I'm not going to lie, I didn't see anything of what Graham Jones was like on the touchline.
Honesty is the best policy.
Well, that's one of the things I've been curious about since Graham Jones's arrival, because we know does a lot of the work on the training pitch. You know, he's brought these fresh ideas. Those are Bruce's words. He's brought different formations, you know, behind different systems they've used. But on a match day, Steve Bruce has been picking the team and, you know, obviously running the bench. So you wonder now there'll be a bit more clarity in terms of that whole structure and organisations, the way the team's prepared for Monday to Friday and then the team's picked on a Saturday. You would hope for, you know, a little bit more clarity could help things. Though, again, we know Jones certainly initially was only going to be in charge for two games, and we would hope an appointment would be coming soon after that.
Yeah, I think you mentioned just in the piece you've done in the last half an hour, Miles, about you know, the fact that it looks like Newcastle, just given off what Graham Jones has said as well, might actually train more days this week than they have under Bruce. That must be hopefully should be a positive in a sense. And as you mentioned, a change of direction.
Yeah, because only hard work's going to get this club, this team out of this mess. And fans and players too, by the way, have found baffling some of the days off the team's been given over the past you know, weeks and months. We all could all point to the Portugal trip and during that international break early in the season. But you know, routinely they've been given more days off than we'd probably think would be appropriate. now, reading between the lines of what Graham Jones is saying, that's something that's been addressed in the immediate term. So again, hopefully that will pay dividends if you're working Monday to Friday towards the weekend. Obviously, you've got to vary the workload ahead of the weekend, but certainly there's work needs to be done every week on the training pitch.
So yeah, it looks like Graham Jones will be in charge for Saturday, but obviously in the background, potential replacements, Paolo Francesca, the former Roma, and Shakhtar Donetsk manager. He is currently the front runner of the bootmakers. You then got the likes of Lucien Favre, Eddie Howe, Frank Lampard, and Steven Gerrard as well. They've also been linked. Just on the profile of the next manager, Miles, who do you think Newcastle, maybe not a name, but what type of manager do Newcastle need to target? Because ultimately, at the minute, they are 19th in the Premier League. There's no guarantees that they'll stay up. And they do need to maybe get someone that can, you know, who has experience of keeping a team in the Premier League.
I think it needs to be a heavyweight, and you probably lean towards a European heavyweight. We've seen the names of Emery, Fonseca, and so on. I don't think this is a job necessarily for Steven Gerrard or Frank Lampard. I would lean more to those first names on the list. It's not a job for a relative novice. We've even had some strange ones. You know, Wayne Rooney was linked with it. Whoever comes in has got a hell of a job in their hands. Let's not beat around the bush about that. Premier League experience, of course, would be important, but not necessarily. Doesn't have to have Premier League experience, but we've seen some big names, some very competent managers linked. So I would hope the club would go down that route.
Yeah, it's one of them. I'd like to see it sort of a manager that has experience of keeping teams in the division, but that always comes with sort of regular names linked, likes of Sam Allardyce, for example. I wouldn't like to see Sam Allardyce at Newcastle United. And there's sort of similar names as well that are the usual suspects, if you like, that are linked. So it's a difficult one. I don't really have a manager in mind for the sort of the first time. Usually when Newcastle sack a manager, there's someone that stands out, but I'm sort of open-minded, to be honest. Joe, I don't know what your thoughts are. Is there any names that you would like to see at Newcastle?
Well, in the last week or so, I've been watching lots of Fonseca videos. I love his style of football. I know they need to get out of relegation trouble, but this is an ideal opportunity to get, as Miles said, get a big name in, get someone who's a little bit different to refresh the whole club. And yeah, for me, it would be Fonseca purely because I think his style of football would go down so well at St. James's Park, the high intensity sort of pressing, quick passing game. I think that would be really good, but obviously that would be good this time next season for the Premier League club, whether that works in winter when there's battling for survival, I'm not sure, but I think you've got to go for it really. That would be my choice anyway.
Yeah, just finally to finish off as well, Miles, you mentioned it earlier, and I say in the piece that you wrote, but the January transfer window, whoever's going to come in and take on the role as Newcastle United manager, head coach, they're going to need a big January transfer window, aren't they?
They are. I don't know how big the club's going to be prepared to spend. There's obviously wheel room in terms of financial fair play. There's the club's got the backing to strengthen. But you would think two or three players are needed. Let's not forget the squad's full. They've got 25 players in that squad, but they need to make room for two or three striker, signers who can really make a difference in the second half of the season, at both ends of the pitch, really.
Yeah, so let's see what happens in the coming weeks. We'll see if there's a potential managerial appointment before the Chelsea game. Maybe not in terms of being on the touchline, but you never know. There might be someone in the stands, or might have to wait until next week or even further. We don't know. Then these things can take time. Obviously, the next manager of Newcastle United is a crucial appointment. It's the first under the new owners. And as I say, the league position makes it a whole lot more difficult as well, because it would be an absolute disaster if the new owners were to come in and Newcastle were to be relegated. But hopefully, yeah, hopefully you won't wait too long to record the next podcast. I'd say we do apologise for the delay, but hopefully we've covered all bases there. And we can all look forward to an exciting future as well for Newcastle. Hopefully the results pick up and then see that takeover mania can really kick start. But thanks to everyone for tuning in at home. Thanks, Miles and Joe, for joining me as ever. You can catch this podcast on Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and all the other usual outlets. Thanks again, everyone. Cheers.